RSV Academy. Talking about RSV with Alberto Poppi. Decoding RSV, from adult implications to vaccine innovations.
Welcome to the RSV Academy podcast, the platform where we explore the intricates of RSV research. I'm your host, Professor Federico Martinon Torres, and today we are honored to have a conversation with Professor Alberto Poppi. Professor Poppi is a professor in respiratory medicine at the University of Ferrara and has been at the forefront of RSV research, contributing to our understanding of the virus and its implication. His recent publications have provided valuable insights into the world of RSV, and today we'll delve into some of these findings. Welcome, Alberto.
Thanks, Federico, for the invitation. I'm very pleased to be here and discuss such a fascinating topic with you.
Thank you, Alberto. Professor Poppi is a renowned figure in the field of RSV research, and one of his most notable recent works includes the New England Journal of Medicine paper on the perfusion F protein candidate vaccine recently licensed in adult RSV prevention. And it has been also a pleasure to collaborate with him in this endeavor. So I think that we could start this conversation or this discussion with a personal thought, let's say. It looks like now that RSV is a trending topic and also among adult physicians, no, and related healthcare professionals, RSV is also a trending topic. But this is not new for those that, like you and your team, that have been working in the field for ages, no. So it's nothing new about the importance of RSV. But what is your first thought when you think as a clinician on RSV?
Yeah, you got the point actually, because it has always been considered RSV, it has been perceived always as a clinical condition that affect mainly childhood, and it's true. I mean, we know that the most typical clinical presentation that has been studied for ages is bronchiolitis and more severe expression in childhood, in babies. But in fact, the RSV infection is very common at all ages with different degree of severity. Luckily, most of the cases are mild. But there are severe expression up to fatal cases. What we have missed for a long time was a real way of evaluating the epidemiology. And as you know, as a clinician, you said it has become trendy. It has become trendy because there is a clinical action that as clinician now we can do. Because we can investigate and we can do study on topics, but until they don't translate into clinical action, the interest is vague. So now, as you said, there are possibility of acting in prevention, and that's why it has become a focus of attention. It has become a clear revision of the data available, because as you said, it's not new. It has been there assessed for a long time. Particularly respiratory physicians have looked at it. The expression usually is mild, is common cold-like, so usually upper respiratory tract. But it can go particularly in at-risk population, which means chronic condition, and I'm referring particularly to the respiratory one because that's my field, but not only chronic cardiovascular condition. They have something in common. They usually affect elderly patient and subject with a chronic condition, which means elderly patient with deficient immune conditions by nature, because we know that immunosenescence is going on, so they are more likely to be infected. In addition, having chronic condition, COPD, asthma, but even heart failure are associated with specific and generic immunodeficiency. So let's say the field is receptive, it means that more frequently and more severely they have an expression of this infection that might turn out to be an exacerbation of the disease. I think this is particularly true for respiratory, but the number, coming back to your question, are impressive. Looking at Europe, 3 million per year are the estimates for RSV infection, out of which around one-tenth they are identified in hospital, with a mortality not relevant, 5 to 7%, which means, if we go into numbers, that it is true that children are those in which we have our attention, but overall, the vast majority, the very vast majority of severe cases and of death actually occur in elderly patients. So this has come out, as you said in the introduction, as something new. It is not new. It has come out because we can act now. So it has become clinically relevant and not only the epidemiological data, which as clinician makes a lot of difference. It's not something that we study on the books, but it's something that I can reason with the patient in front of me. And this makes it a topic relevant for clinicians.
No, I fully agree with what you have just said. And I think that one of the points indeed is that when you don't have a specific intervention, either preventive or therapeutic, you don't really care in, let's say, daily practice, no, or beyond the areas of super expertise or, as your case and your group, people that is specifically dedicated to pulmonology or to research pulmonology. But also I think that probably you will agree with me that the pandemic helped us to rebuild RSV as like an emerging or re-emerging pathogen in the adulthood, no? Because of the increase in the number of testings and the use of molecular arrays. No? There are reports, I saw it in my own hospital, no? Like how when performing SARS-CoV-2 tests and using these molecular arrays, including multiple tests, RSV increased, while, as you already mentioned, no, RSV was already there. I don't know if you had the same feeling.
You know, I think you're absolutely right. There are two issues that came with COVID. One is what you mentioned. One, i.e., people has become used to be tested for detection of potential infections. And speaking prospectively, this makes it quite useful for the future to identify and have a real epidemiology of RSV as for other viruses. The other is the attitude. Despite the study being conducted, the study on RSV vaccine that you mentioned has been conducted during the COVID period, which made it quite difficult actually to, because of the COVID restriction, because of the negative SARS-CoV-2 that should be tested. So it was complex. But despite this, honestly, it has been the only study when I got subject knocking at the door, where we are recruiting patients for RSV vaccination, knocking at the door and asking to be recruited. Usually we have to follow and to rush and find patient in this case. So yes, you're right. I think the attitude, generally speaking, of course there are exceptions, as we know, but generally speaking, the attitude towards prevention of what is preventable, I think this is a new concept. We have moved in respiratory field as well toward this, not waiting for the risk to be at maximal, but when there is a flag out that there is a risk and there is an intervention, either preventive or treatment, there is no reason why I shouldn't put it on my clinical
and
practice.
I also have a question for you regarding how good or bad is to compare RSV with flu, no, with influenza infection? Because often when we even read the literature and the papers, we try to see, or we tend to see RSV as compared with influenza, no? From the pivotal and important ANFORCE paper, but from there, no? We like to compare them. Do you think this is fair? Do you think that is a good comparison point? How does RSV actually compare with influenza in daily practice, in morbidity, in mortality?
Yes, I think it's a fair comparison because we have solid epidemiological data on flu for various reasons. So it's a good standard available quite commonly worldwide to reference the frequency of RSV. So in adult, because you know in children there is something different. The RSV is very important, not only as acute, but it's triggering probably a change in the immunological response and promoting asthma, promoting lower development of the lung. But in adults, the comparison is even more required because we haven't studied that much as we did in children. So now there are several data of direct comparison, particularly I would say in hospitalized subject, which is understandable because when you start having trace and epidemiological data, you start from the setting where it's more simple to have it, which is certainly the hospital. And it turns out that the frequency it's very similar in terms of association with outcomes. Actually, if anything, for what we know, it's worse in terms of severe exacerbation of COPD, for example, and we knew it, that RSV is a trigger more relevant than flu for exacerbating COPD. And there are some data, they are consistent. It's not many, but they are consistent on mortality. Interestingly, not only mortality in the acute phase, mm-hmm. but after a severe expression, an hospitalized expression where RSV has been found versus flu over 1 year time, there is quite a substantial difference in overall mortality, which as a respiratory physician, to be honest, does not me surprise too much. If I think of exacerbation of COPD where RSV has a much greater role than flu for different reasons, including the available vaccination, of course. Exacerbation or COPD are associated with poor outcome, particularly in severe patients, that are not limited to the respiratory tract, and they're not limited to the acute event. We have increased cardiovascular events from myocardial infarction to cardiovascular death, particularly in the first 30 days, but up to 1 year after an exacerbation. So, yeah, the fact that a trigger of an exacerbation of COPD is associated, like RSV, is associated with worse outcome over 1 year compared to a trigger less frequently found with exacerbation, like flu, it's not totally surprising a respiratory physician. Mm-hmm. But yeah, generally comparable, if anything, worse. Yeah.
That's a good point, no? And I particularly your last statement, no? And in any case, maybe worse, no? Which I think is something that we should keep in mind. I have a very simple practical question in this regard, and it is, well, from a very basic clinical daily practice, no? Is the clinical presentation of RSV, it's practically indistinguishable of other respiratory infections, namely flu or others. No? So when do you think we should do the testing? In which patients and how? Because clinical presentation probably is not enough to make or to have a high degree of suspicion, or maybe yes. So in which patients we should suspect RSV infection, and when that happens, in which patients should we performing RSV testing?
Yeah, let me say that the question is relevant for having a picture of the clinical presentation, because as we discussed earlier, from the clinical viewpoint, when you have the infection has already happened, and what you need to do is treat what are the consequences of the exacerbation. Well, at the moment, I think that the real burden is still to be fully known. So I would really focus on hospitalized patient with, from my side, I would say with respiratory symptoms, acute respiratory symptoms. I know that it is limited because, as you are well aware, quite a substantial proportion of patients with cardiovascular myocardial infarction, for example, have concomitant RSV. Actually, an RSV infection increased the risk of being hospitalized for myocardial infarction of 2 to 3 times. So, and that is more difficult because it's far away from the respiratory tract. And then I think you need specific investigation, which the pure purpose of having the epidemiological picture and the frame of how the expression can be. In clinical practice, what we are doing actually now that and the world is moving towards a greater attention of RSV, it's testing RSV along with other respiratory viruses in acute infection. We are at the moment doing it in hospitalized patients because from the emergency room up to whatever ward they are then going into, it can be at any severity and with any clinical expression, but it is the infection that now is still the flag. As you said, I'm not sure it is the only one, but we have to start from what we know, so we have to start from the most obvious one, which is the respiratory symptoms.
You mentioned a very interesting point that reminds me also in the pediatric field, one of the barriers we have found in terms of finding a treatment, no, which is that by the time the patient actually has respiratory symptoms, particularly with lower respiratory tract involvement, probably is late. No? We know that in the pediatric patients, the host response is essential. So irrespective of the amount, the viral load, and any other factor, no, by the time you're seeing the patient in the hospital setting, some part of the damage is already done, and probably an antiviral specific treatment may be late in the course because you cannot deal with the host part, no, with just an antiviral, no, and maybe it's the same, no, for the adult arena, in the sense that by the time you're seeing your patient with symptoms in the hospital setting, I'm thinking now for the current lack of specific treatments, no, for RSV patients. No? What do you think?
Yeah, there is something in addition because in children we have a specific clinical presentation, which is bronchiolitis with all the problems in treating bronchiolitis. In adults, more likely this patient and more frequently have an exacerbation of a pre-existing disease. So what we see, you're right, I mean, when they come with an exacerbation, for example, either asthma or COPD, or a pneumonia led by an RSV infection, RSV has already done the damage. So the treatment is on the clinical expression to reduce the severity of the outcome and to eventually overcome what virus has triggered. It is not only, of course there is a direct damage, but it is not only the direct damage, but it is the immune response, it is the host response that then creates what we see as symptom, think of mucus plugging, think of obstruction of the airways. In addition, if there is an underlying chronic condition, that is exacerbated, so we have a worsening of the inflammation that is associated with the underlying condition. And that's why it doesn't come immediate to check for viruses because when it comes it's already there. The data that is there, and it has been replicated several times, has always been done for research purposes until now, and for epidemiological data to see, for example, how frequent they are triggering an exacerbation of COPD. And now it has become a standard of assessment. As clinician, one of the first questions I get is, how much and how many? And until we get there, I think it's crucial to understand the real size of the problem. It comes out that it is much more frequent when properly looked at RSV that we thought. This is part of the narrative that needs to enter into the education of physician, because it has not been properly done in the past for several reasons. We mentioned that there was no treatment. Probably the sensitivity of the test that were available was suboptimal. But this has led to not properly perceive the importance of such an infection.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that the good news, no, today is that it's true that we cannot. There is a lot of gaps in the knowledge of the burden that probably, as you very properly said, we need to educate the healthcare professional, not only in the dimension, but on the practical attitude towards these patients. We also have a knowledge that we don't have specific treatments yet for several reasons. But the good news indeed is that we can now prevent, no, at least a big fraction of these patients. So let's dig into this. No, you have been the lead investigator on one of these vaccines, and you have been essential in the phase 3 pivotal study that has led to the license of one of these vaccines, the pre-FRSV adjuvated with AS01 candidate. No, and I'd like you to share firsthand. No, what are your feelings about this, the vaccines in general for the RSV in the elderly population, but specifically, no, on the vaccine you have been working directly. What are your views and insights?
Yeah. Let me say that the perspective of treating and preventing respiratory condition is really changing, and this vaccine comes really at the right time. Because until now, as respiratory physician, then I'll make it broad, but let me start from what I know best. As respiratory physician, we are fully in charge, and we feel in charge of the treatment of the patient, which is mainly inhaled treatment, 1, 2, 3, 4 inhaled treatments, plus eventually now biologics or pills or whatever. While we have been delegating vaccination, though recognizing the importance of vaccination, we have been delegating vaccination to just a general recommendation without being properly in charge of then what? Has it been done properly? Has it been done? I think partially with COVID, as we discussed, but partially because with the other medication I mentioned earlier, we have probably reached the top of what we can do with inhalers. The horizon is really changing. We are moving toward biological intervention. We are moving towards prevention, acting on avoiding risk factors from environmental to behavior, and vaccination are now fully perceived as a treatment that a preventive intervention that a physician should be in charge for, not just for a general recommendation, but for a proper management of the disease. The vaccine we have tested, and similarly other vaccine that has finished phase three, have shown a substantial protection, very substantial, to be honest. And again, let me get into the clinical side of the story, because I think there is a huge difference between epidemiologists and clinicians. Mm-hmm. Epidemiologists do consider the good for the entire society, which is mandatory and necessary. But when I see patients, I see one patient at a time, I have one single patient in front of me. So the fact that we have a very high efficacy in patients with concomitant diseases, to me, is strikingly important, because that's the patient that I see. That's where I can translate immediately into my practice the importance of going on with vaccination. Patient with concomitant cardiovascular, respiratory, metabolic condition, which are at higher risk of infection for the reason that we mentioned earlier, they have probably one of the highest level of efficacy. So it becomes imperative for me that I see patients. That's why I say it's different from epidemiologists that reasons on society. For me, it's a patient to manage them properly, because the efficacy of the vaccine then is superbly high. So that's what it's coming as immediate translation of the outcomes of the study on the efficacy of RSV vaccination.
Well, I think that's a very important statement, the one you have performed, no? How vaccines in general, and not only RSV vaccines, should be part, no, of the duties and the commitments of the clinicians as part of the arrive of measurements that they can take with their patients, no? And it's a good take-home message. And if we go into more detail, I mean, I agree that the results of both the GSK and the Pfizer vaccines, the two ones that have been already licensed, no, that have fulfilled the regulatory criteria, at least by the EMA and the FDA, but probably they will be soon licensed in many other countries, no? Well, the results are absolutely positive, no? I think that beyond the original expectations we might have, no? And interestingly also, and I now talk as a pediatrician, we were able to reach that milestone before in the adult arena than in the pediatric arena, no? Which is, it's something that...
Yeah, that's very interesting, by the way. It means that really it's not exactly the same.
Absolutely.
The immune system is different.
Yeah, same virus, different disease indeed. Yeah. I agree. So now we have at least two tools, no, and others on later stage of clinical trials. So, and some of the recommending bodies, let's say GCBI in the UK, ACIP in the States, have already started to elaborate some recommendations. But beyond this, or having this as a background, what's your view on the general recommendations of these vaccines? I mean, if you have the power to implement, no, the policy for vaccination against RSV with the available tools, which should be your recommendation?
Yeah, two considerations. One is related to what you said about regulatory agency, because the fact that it has been decided to go on with a recommendation with the data of one single season without waiting for the whole package, up to 2 or 3 years, with the reason that what we have, it's enough to indicate that it's better to do it rather than not to do it, to me it's already a strong signal of what needs to be done. The implementation. So my view is that elderly patient more than 60 should go for it. If they are patient, they have a chronic condition, either cardio or respiratory condition, it's even more striking the recommendation for prevention of something that can worsen their disease and can come out with the worst clinical outcomes. The implementation, I think it, yeah, you're right, it has to be felt as a part of the responsibility of the physician, not only the hygienist, to take care of it. What to me, and I'm speaking about the Italian way of organization, but I think it's a bit more, it's not only Italy. We need vaccination, I'm not saying in our hand, but next door to our clinical practice. And that's what we are doing actually here and in other places, having vaccination places and hygienists next door. So when patient comes out from my clinic, it can go directly to next door and having the program for vaccination ready to go without having a general recommendation to come back and having the plan done. So it seems they are minimal issue, but as you know, the organization, particularly in elderly patient, becomes very, very important for having a take of the vaccine that is substantial.
Mm-hmm. And Alberto, knowing that you have an in-depth knowledge of the available vaccines, what are the remaining gaps, no, in terms of what we need to know about these vaccines? I agree with your point, and I think it's a strong message, no, that what we have is already strong enough to make recommendations, so we don't need to wait longer, no, to start acting with the available vaccines. But what's next? I mean, even with these vaccines, what's next? What do we need to know?
Yeah, I think the duration is an issue. No, it's not an issue, because at the end we will know how many times and when and if we need to booster it. But in terms of organization of vaccination, it's relevant. It's funny that the simple thing, the organization issues, at the end of the story becomes crucial. So, it is crucial for the organization. It is crucial for concomitant other vaccination. It is crucial from a scientific point, if you think of, because whether the protection and the immunological reason for the protection is lasting or possible to be renewed, it's something that we need to more about. It will come, so it's something that it is already ongoing for all vaccines, because what we have now is, yes, go on and start. It is better to start with what we have than not to do it, given the efficacy provided. The old box will come later on, and it will come because the study are planned, but there are still gaps that needs to be filled for scientific reasons. I really want to know the trajectory of the immunological protection, both clinically and also in terms of mediator, and practically, though to me it's still strange, but practically it's dramatically important to manage an organization of vaccination for these patients.
Well, we have covered more than half an hour of interesting discussion, but before we close, I want to give you the chance. I don't know if there is any topic, any comment, any idea you'd like to comment or share that I have missed or that you would like to reinforce before we close this podcast.
No, I think we have touched the most relevant items, and I think the message with time highlighted are the most relevant one. If I may have a conclusion statement is that the first step is thinking of it and having an education of the health system in general, that RSV has potential, is frequent, has potential very severe outcome, and that we have now possibility to prevent it. So it has to become a common way of thinking rather than an exception or a single case that come out, as it was in the past, single case that came out because we didn't know what to check and we went to look for it. It has to become a clinical practice.
Well, thank you very much, Alberto. Thank you very much, Professor Papi, for sharing your insights and expertise with us today. And on behalf of the RSV Academy team, thank you for tuning in. And to our listeners, please stay tuned for more enlightening discussions on the captivating world of RSV. Thank you.
Thank you.